new leadership of Kabore.
This is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, U.S. Republican presidential contenders react to the fight against terrorism. A potential political shakeup in France. New hope for people who can no longer speak.
The voice sounds a little bit like a kazoo, kind of robotic sounding, like something like that. And so you would hear that sound and think, gosh, that sounds kind of synthesized or robotic. It doesn't sound so human.
And a blockbuster movie offers pieces of its history. These stories and more just ahead. I'm Ray Kugel. Republican U.S. presidential frontrunner Donald Trump is calling for a total and complete block on Muslims entering the United States until the nation's leaders can figure out what is going on. Those are his words. The billionaire real estate developer alleges that polling data shows hatred towards Americans by large segments of the Muslim population. Monday's statement followed the terrorist attacks in Paris and San Bernardino, California. It also follows by a day President Obama's address to the nation urging Americans not to turn against Muslims. The White House quickly condemned Mr. Trump's proposal, calling it totally contrary to our values as Americans. The recent attacks in California and France have increased voter scrutiny on the 2016 presidential candidates. Joining us is Newsweek political correspondent Emily Cadet, who is following how Mr. Trump and other Republican contenders are reacting to the issue.
What you saw initially, particularly after Paris, was that a lot of the sort of what you'd call establishment candidates, the elected governors and longtime political leaders in the field, were really trying to make a pitch that they had the experience and sort of the gravitas to handle this sort of serious situation. And it hasn't really worked that well for folks like Jeb Bush and John Kasich, but it does perhaps seem to be starting to work for Chris Christie. I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that he won an endorsement from a key New Hampshire newspaper, but in that state, he seems to be having a little bit of a renaissance. So it's worth keeping an eye on him. And a lot of it has to do with his sort of tough talk on terrorism and the fact that he was a prosecutor after 9/11 and, has handled terrorist cases and that sort of thing. But the really interesting thing to me is that people like Donald Trump, who really don't have any experience with military or defense or national security, are still hanging in there and doing quite well. I mean, he is still leading in most of the polls. And Ted Cruz, who's been a senator for only a short period of time and doesn't have much foreign policy experience, has actually been surging as well.
Chris Christie has come out against some of those candidates. You quote him in your article as saying, "New seems fabulous until the moment it comes that you need the experience."
Yeah, and I mean, all these guys are using some sort of ominous risk or threat to try and make their pitch. So for Christie, it's sort of him saying, look, when it really comes down to it and something really scary happens, I'm the guy who has the experience and kind of keep us safe. But of course, you have a lot of people that right now are just angry, and what they really want to hear is someone who's promising to take the fight to these jihadists who have been shooting people in Paris and now in California. And so I think that despite the fact that Trump and even Cruz don't have a lot of specifics, they like their tone. It's almost that tone right now matters more than actual substance.
And you make the point, particularly in Iowa, where three-quarters of the Republican voters support sending ground troops, actually, to fight Islamic State. And a large number of them, nearly half, think that Trump is ready to be commander-in-chief.
Right. And again, I think that goes back to sort of how he presents himself. He doesn't show any sort of signs of weakness. He never second-guesses himself. He's just utterly confident all the time. And I think that voters want to feel confident that someone can do something, because a lot of issues that we're facing in the world right now, particularly in the Middle East, are really difficult and complex issues. And it's nice for someone to have that kind of certainty. I don't know if it's really realistic. I would argue that it's not, because it's a lot more complicated than he's making it out to be.
Some of the knocks against Trump have been that he has not offered any specifics on how to actually go about doing this. He does talk tough in saying we're going to get the guys, but he hasn't really laid out specific plans or ideas of how he wants to accomplish that.
No, it doesn't seem like the people who support him really mind that. I think they like more the attitude. He has talked about some things, you know, he lambasted the political correctness of people who don't want to profile, you know, Muslims specifically. You know, he's talked about, you know, it's overly politically correct in the country now, and we really need to be looking at some of these questions of how Muslims are getting radicalized, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's one of the things the president talked about, was warning against that and really warning against Americans sort of looking suspiciously at all Muslim Americans now, which is sort of what Trump has suggested.
That's Emily Cadet, political correspondent for Newsweek magazine. You can find her article online, How the GOP Field is Being Shaken Up by the Paris Attacks. She spoke with International Edition's Jim Stevenson. Last month's Islamic State-led terror attacks in Paris have spurred Western political leaders to try and craft a comprehensive strategy for defeating the militant group on the battlefields of Syria and Iraq. But they also reminded many observers that more needs to be done to attack the group where it has a sizable foothold, online. VOA's Doug Bernard covers the cyber world and spoke about the issue with International Edition host Susan Yockey.
The U.S. State Department has been trying to counter some of these messages, either the ISIS narrative of pleasant life in ISIS-controlled regions, or those very violent incitements to commit, you know, terrorist acts and that kind of thing. But really, those efforts have just not really amounted to very much. And so there's a sense that more needs to be done, and I think right now people are really struggling to figure out what that more is.
It said ISIS has used social media very successfully so far.
Yes.
What are they doing right, and what can be done to counter that?
You know, interestingly, two of the things they've done right is they have thousands upon thousands of social media accounts across a variety of platforms. Twitter is one of the most prominent, but just one. What happens there is those thousands of accounts that pop up and submerge and pop up again kind of mutually reinforce a message, so it kind of pushes Twitter or social media in general to make it appear that something is going viral, even when it may not be. But something else that they're doing right, one researcher I spoke with who studies online virality, what makes things sort of explode online, her research suggests that maybe the most important predictor are emotions, and specifically the emotion of anger. If you see something that gets your heart racing and really kind of makes you flush with anger, believe it or not, you're much more likely to share that. And of course, thinking back to a lot of those ISIS social media posts, that is exactly what they're doing.
Well, you mentioned another time you were talking to me about Anonymous going to war with ISIS. What have they done so far, and what are the concerns about their involvement?
So far, Anonymous has had some measure of success. They've taken down maybe 5,000 or so Twitter accounts. They're planning what's called an International Day of Rage on December 11th, where they're encouraging people to kind of go out and troll ISIS. But really, these kinds of efforts are more nuisance than they are really kind of fundamentally attacking ISIS online. And one researcher I spoke with, he's a former member of Anonymous, but now he's working more closely with the FBI and other U.S. Intelligence agencies. He says, actually, there's a tremendous amount of valuable intelligence that can be gleaned from these ISIS-backed social media accounts. And so if you're just going about willy-nilly shutting them down, you actually might be shutting down important avenues to learn about the enemy.
VOA cyber correspondent Doug Bernard talking with International Edition's Susan Yockey. France's far-right National Front came out on top in the first round of the country's regional elections. It won almost a third of the votes and the biggest share in six out of France's 13 regions. The result is a surprise. It comes as a blow to President François Hollande of the Socialist Party, whose popularity has been rising in the aftermath of last month's terror attacks in Paris. Henry Ridgewell reports.
The first political test for France since the attacks, and the National Front under Marine Le Pen has emerged as the clear winner. She said the result showed the old political world is crumbling.
Le Front National est le seul front véritablement républicain.
She said the National Front is the only truly Republican force because it is the only one to defend the nation and its sovereignty. Party supporters, like Ludovic in the northern city of Lille, were jubilant. The French people are fed up and it's time to change things, he said. Among opponents, there was widespread shock. Serena De Massi of the southern city of Perpignan said it was a pity that the Paris attacks played such a big role. Following the attacks, Le Pen has argued that France should not take in any Muslim immigrants. The final result will be decided in a second round, where voters may rally to the main centrist parties. But the Republicans of former President Nicolas Sarkozy have ruled out cooperating with the socialists to block the National Front from winning, a tactic used in past elections. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
The first challenge comes on Sunday in the final round of voting in France. The election comes as France remains under tight security following last month's terrorist attacks in Paris that left 130 people dead. Atlantic Council French analyst Ben Haddad told International Edition's Victor Beatty, it is a trend that's been developing in recent years.
If you look at the European elections in 2014, the National Front came out ahead nationally for the first time. This is the second time they do so on a national basis. It's also part of a more broader trend in Europe when you see the rise of a populist party all over Europe that are prospering on the anti-immigration and the Eurosceptic message.
What is driving this? Is it the concern about terrorism, or in France, is there a concern about the economy, or both?
It's both. I mean, it's clear that the recent attacks contributed to this result. I mean, there's been a lot of worry in France over security issues, and, you know, it obviously mixed with the debates over immigration, integration, and refugees, and the National Front has been emerging for the last few years, reinforced by the Euro crisis and the debates over immigration in France. But this is the result of a longer trend, but that's been clearly accelerated by the recent attacks.
Now, there is a second round next Sunday of these regional council elections. Do you anticipate the Republicans, Socialists, and other parties are going to gang up on the National Front?
The Socialists already announced that in two regions, in the north and in the southeast, they would actually withdraw and support the Republicans, which is a center-right party, the one of the former president, Nicolas Sarkozy. So maybe they could give a shot to the Republicans. But this is mostly symbolic at this point. I mean, these are not a major turning point in terms of political power in France, but it's an ominous sign just a year and a half before the presidential election of 2017.
Well, the Le Figaro front page Monday is reading the shock, while the Libération headlines is getting closer, a reference to the party's quest for power. What do you make of those headlines?
I mean, it is a shock for the French elite. But at the same time, I mean, it's also a wake-up call that it's time to really confront, on the one hand, issues that the National Front has been talking about, the limits and the failures of European integration and the questions related to integration French national identity, security. These are issues that the French care about and that the elite has been extremely reluctant to address because they didn't want to reinforce the National Front, but at the same time do it in a much more inclusive way, in a much more positive way.
Ben Haddad, Atlantic Council French analyst, says while the National Front is a long way from competing at the presidential level with the Socialists and Republicans, its newfound strength will have an impact on how major issues are discussed. He spoke with my colleague, Victor Beatty. This is VOA.
This is Greenbee for a healthier planet.
Touted as the world's first people-powered roller coaster, the Green Dragon is a main attraction at the environmentally friendly Greenwood Forest Park just south of Bangor, Wales. Managing Director Stephen Bristow says visitors can have a great day out without using a lot of energy.
We want to give them a fun day out that is not a huge drain on the environment.
The Green Dragon uses the weight of passengers in a separate carriage to haul the cars to the top. The passengers then have to climb a staircase before hurtling down a winding 250-meter track. Just adjacent to the park is an array of solar panels that can produce up to 135 kilowatts of electricity at peak capacity.
It will still go on generating even in fairly low light levels, and it puts power into our systems.
More than 145,000 people visited the park last year to enjoy other low-energy attractions like pedal-powered moon carts, a 70-meter slide, and archery. I'm Rebecca Ward for VOA's Green Beat.
This is VOA's International Edition. People who have lost their voice permanently may have new reason to be hopeful it will come back. Scientists have grown vocal cord tissue in the lab. The tissue, bioengineered by U.S. researchers, was able to transmit sound. VOA's Jessica Berman explains.
Most of us have lost our voice at some point in our lives due to a temporary throat infection known as laryngitis, or from screaming too much at a football match or concert. But for millions of people around the world, damage to their vocal cords is permanent, according to Nathan Wellum, a University of Wisconsin speech-language pathologist. He says losing the ability to speak can be a crushing experience.
Certain congenital problems or scarring or tissue loss following surgery to remove an invasive cancer or lesions such as HPV can cause substantial voice loss that's very challenging to treat with our current methods. These types of voice problems can have a devastating impact on the effectiveness and ease of communication with loved ones and social situations in the workplace and in the marketplace.
Using larynx tissue from a cadaver and four individuals who had their voice boxes removed for reasons other than cancer, Wellum and colleagues extracted specialized cells, which they coaxed to grow on a three-dimensional collagen scaffold. After about 2 weeks, the tissue had grown enough to implant it into cadaver dogs. Wellum says the regenerated vocal folds were grown to human size, between 15 to 18 millimeters in length and about 1 millimeter thick. The researchers describe how they engineered the vocal folds in the journal Science Translational Medicine. They tested the bioengineered mucosal tissue by attaching it to an artificial windpipe and then blew humidified air through the larynxes. Wellum told reporters in a teleconference that the engineered vocal tissue made an unnatural but encouraging sound.
The voice sounds a little bit like a kazoo, kind of robotic sounding, like something like that. And so you would hear that sound and think, gosh, that sounds kind of synthesized or robotic. It doesn't sound so human. But that's how it should sound in this context.
Also, the new vocal cord tissues don't seem to trigger the body's immune response. That creates the possibility new vocal cords could easily be transplanted into humans. In addition, the tissue may be protected against attack by the body's immune system naturally. There are some tissues that do not stimulate an immune rejection, like the eye's corneas. At least the vocal tissue was protected in experiments with mice. The experiment is what's called a proof-of-principle study, and Wellum says human trials are still many years away. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Time now to check out what's trending online. Social media correspondent G. Abby Lee is here. Hi, G.
Hi, Ray.
What do you have for us today?
We're talking about a quote-unquote tribunal for an agricultural biotech company, a highly controversial one, by the way. The company is Monsanto, and it's facing a trial by a number of advocacy groups. Monsanto has been in the hot seat for decades for its impact on the environment and people's health. But the latest announcement is perhaps the biggest blow to the company in recent years.
We hear a lot about Monsanto here in America, so what's going on now?
We sure do. Monsanto currently offers conventional and genetically modified seeds, as well as technologies related to yielding crops. The company is on Twitter at MonsantoCO and describes itself as an agricultural company working with others to address the world's food challenges and sustain the environment. But the environment and food security are exactly the two things it's being accused of harming. Before they got into the food industry, the company primarily dealt with chemicals. They were responsible for manufacturing a number of toxic chemicals, from caffeine to Agent Orange and various pesticides and herbicides.
I see, that's true. Now, what does a tribunal consist of? It doesn't seem to sound like an official tribunal by an international organization.
It isn't. A global group of professional scientists and environmentalists have joined forces to stand against the GMO seed giant. The date is set for October 16th next year in The Hague, Netherlands. The group is determined to charge the American company with what they call an ecocide, meaning killing of the environment. And establishing ecocide as a crime is one of its main goals. Other goals include researching and evaluating the various allegations made against the company.
And what are they going to base these new accusations on?
The tribunal said it will rely on the guiding principles on business and human rights adopted at the UN in 2011. It will also assess the potential criminal liability on the basis of the Rome Statute. That's what created the International Criminal Court, or the ICC, in The Hague in 2002. You can read more about the group on its website at monsanto-tribunal.org. Ray?
Thanks, G. The International Edition team would love to hear from our listeners as well. You can tweet us your feedback at VOA_IE. And you can tweet G's account at GABBEY. That's JEEABBEYLEE. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. You can listen to Encounter on Saturdays and Sundays. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on the Voice of America.
One of the world's great cities, the gateway to America for generations. VOA brings you New York in 12 rarely seen views. Presenting the 2016 VOA calendar, a gift from us, free for the asking. Just send us your mailing address in an email to calendar@voanews.com, and you can have New York's beauty grace your wall all next year.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. The next installment of the Star Wars movie series, Star Wars: The Force Awakens, opens in theaters this month. An auction will give fans the chance to own a piece of movie history. Here's International Edition's David Byrd.
There has been an awakening. Have you felt it?
It has been nearly 40 years since Luke Skywalker, Han Solo, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Princess Leia, and Darth Vader came to our world from a galaxy far, far away. Now Sotheby's is holding its first ever auction of Star Wars memorabilia, including props, action figures, and other items associated with the films. Hundreds of rare and original collectibles associated with Star Wars will go on the block December 11th in New York. James Gallo is the owner of Toy and Comic Heaven. He says that fans have the chance to own some of the original action figures from 1977 to 1985.
There's over 400 carded action figures from that time frame, which is both a great assortment of stuff and a very high number of figures.
Among the figures are some original Luke Skywalker figures with a two-piece lightsaber in its original packaging. The figure is expected to fetch between $12,000 and $18,000 at auction. James Gallo says that having the extremely rare figure is something special.
I mean, there's probably a dozen or so really rare and significant items in the sale. There's a double telescoping Luke Skywalker on the card, which originally the lightsaber figures, the Luke, the Ben Kenobi, and the Darth Vader had a two-piece lightsaber. It was very quickly changed out to a one-piece lightsaber. So it's a very rare item to have that. There's approximately about 20, 25 noting samples of that on the card.
Also up for sale are masks, including an Imperial Stormtrooper and Darth Vader, made from the molds for Star Wars: Revenge of the Sith. An autographed lightsaber carried by actor Samuel L. Jackson in the Star Wars prequel trilogy is also available. James Gallo says the sale, which is from the collection of Japanese designer Nigo, even offers something that fans got when there was no Star Wars memorabilia, a promissory certificate from the toy companies.
We have the very first Star Wars action figure item that was produced, which is the store display for the early bird certificate package. This item was produced for Christmas of 1977. So the movie came out in May 1977. Nobody expected it to be a hit. So there was no way to get any toy product to market for Christmas time. So Kenner came up with the idea of basically selling an empty envelope. And it's basically a cardboard backdrop with a mail-in certificate that when you mailed it in, they said, hey, in 4 months, you'll get, you know, a set of four figures in the mail.
Other items up for sale include a set of seven action figures from The Empire Strikes Back that were only sold at Sears stores in Canada. Two framed sets of 62 aluminum coins offered with the figures are available for bid as well. The online auction is December 11th at Sotheby's.com/Star Wars Auction and eBay.com/Sotheby's. I'm David Byrd in Washington.
That's it for this edition of International Edition. You can get news, features, videos, podcasts, and much more on our website at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Gender-based violence is violence directed against women because they are women, or violence that affects primarily women and girls. They are human rights violations committed against women that stem from discrimination and gender inequality, and the failure of governments and societies to recognize the human rights of women and girls. Globally, over one-third of women and girls experience some form of physical or sexual violence in their lifetime. Violence against women takes many forms and goes far beyond rape and physical intimidation. Every girl who was married off too young, every wife who was beaten by her husband or in-laws, every woman or girl who was trafficked into sexual exploitation is a victim of gender-based violence. Girls and women who are subjected to sexual violence in war zones, honor killing, psychological abuse, such as harassment and intimidation, are victims of gender-based violence. All forms of gender-based violence are unacceptable violations of human rights, but together they form an enormous obstacle to gender equality, economic development, security, and true human progress. The 2 weeks between November 25th, the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women, and December 10th, Human Rights Day, are dedicated to 16 days of activism against gender-based violence. 16 days of campaigning around the world to challenge and raise awareness of gender-based violence and mobilizing people everywhere to bring about change. This year's theme is From Peace in the Home to Peace in the World, Make Education Safe for All. The root causes of violence against women and girls include gender stereotypes, perceived gender roles, and social norms. These perceptions are formed early in childhood. Only through education can we hope to change them. This means that girls and women must be able to obtain an education so they and their children can lead better lives. It means creating a safe, hygienic school environment for them and removing obstacles that cut their education short, such as domestic work or early marriage. And it means that boys and men must be taught to engage in preventing violence against women and promoting gender equality. Gender-based violence is not inevitable. It is a choice. It can and must be prevented, and the time is now.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.